welcome back here once again for another episode of Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics. I'm Paul Panisco, and again, thanks for taking some time. We have another chat here today, and today I have a pair of guests, and you know, game days entail so much. You know, we've certainly talked about all the things that kind of happen on campus, but you know, game days bring in people from all around our community, not only as fans, but also in a working capacity. And I want to talk to a pair of guys that have done an awful lot for our campus and continue to do so. Our public address announcer, our PA announcer, is Tom O'Neill. He has filled that role for a while. And of course, you know, Tommy has been on the airwaves in Butte, Montana, working for Town Square Media for a long time. I had the pleasure of working with him for a year or so. He is exceptional when it comes to the PA for not only basketball, volleyball, and football. We're going to chat with him. And also, Josh Margolis from NBC Montana. I'm interested to talk to these guys about what first got them here, you know, to the campus of Montana Tech in Butte, Montana, but also kind of how we prepare differently for game days, the things we're looking for, what we like about game days, and just kind of, I don't know, as you might imagine, if you know Tom O'Neill or you know the friendship he and I have, this conversation kind of goes all over the map, and for that, I kind of apologize, but I kind of don't. It's just the way it is, I guess. It's good to learn some things about Tommy, and actually I learned an awful lot about Josh as well. But the one thing that you will certainly hear out of all of us is our love of Montana Tech athletics and, you know, the fact that we're all excited about August getting turning and getting back into athletics. So, again, our conversation here today with our public address announcer, Tom O'Neill, and, of course, from NBC Montana. Josh Margolis, who puts in a ton of time here on campus and around our community. Without further ado, let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Tom O'Neill.
Hello.
How you doing?
Great, Paul. How you doing?
I'm lovely. Josh Margolis, how are you?
I'm doing superb on this. Well, Friday is when we're recording. I don't mean to go behind the curtain.
No, it's good. In. It's good. I mean, if I'm really... If we're going to be real honest, there's a chance it might be out today, but okay. It's probably going to be Monday.
Monday. Well, there's a lot of stuff that can happen between now and
Monday. Oh, yeah. Truly. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Roll Digs. I'm Paul Panisco, and I asked these guys in because, obviously, Tommy O and I have known each other, honestly, since right after the Civil War is when we were introduced, and we were on separate sides of that line.
Well, yeah, we were dividing things up.
But, yeah, yeah, we won't get into who was on which side of that, but we've known each other forever.
Long time.
We've had the luxury of working together for a year, and the FCC did not shut us down in that year. But
fate did, which is very unfortunate. You know, and
that's a solid point.
It was a good year. I miss it.
It was. I do too. Parts of it, anyway.
It's like, I like quitting time, but yeah.
Josh Margolis, NBC Montana, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's, I love summer in Montana. It's going to be a little bit of a chilly weekend, but hopefully we get some much-needed rain, and I'm excited for all the live music this summer, Folk Fest, all that good stuff. A little bit of a downtime for sports, so a little bit more time for me to adventure around.
There you go. And we'll kind of get into that as well. I want to talk about how... Josh, you are lucky enough, and you took our invitation, so that means you haven't been around Tom and I long enough, because most people are going to be like, I don't want, I am done with you two.
There's a reason you're the only one here.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case.
Luke said no, DJ said no.
Their people had, they just didn't get back to us. Okay. They made it sound like it was a long process, but when it gets right down to it, it was no. Sorry, Luke.
Yeah. Why don't we start? Let's start with you, Josh.
Okay.
Let's talk about first. Let's give us your history. What got you here? And then we'll kind of go around the table if you don't mind.
Well, what got me here to Butte?
Yeah, where were you born? Where were you raised? What do you got going on?
I was born in the suburbs, west suburbs of Minneapolis. I grew up a combination of Golden Valley, Minnetonka, Hopkins. Went to Hopkins High School. It was about senior year at Hopkins. I really started getting into journalism, covering this sports for the school paper. We had a great basketball team. They made a run all the way to the state title game, and I just had a blast covering that team and kind of knew I wanted a career somewhere in there. So from there, went to Indiana University, covered IU basketball in different capacities for my entire time at the school. Went through the end of the Tom Crean era, which was pretty interesting. The end of the Archie Miller, the start of the Archie Miller era, which was a little less interesting, but had some fun moments in there.
Okay.
And from there, I worked at an escape room after college for six months as I looked for a job.
Were you doing play by play in the escape room? Because like a two-way mirror, play by play of an escape room could be pretty epic.
It would. I was basically a game master, so. I had the headset like I do now, and was in front of a screen and helping people out. And
that's
different degrees of sobriety.
That's too much freedom. That's
when it came to the people playing. Sometimes NBA players would come in. Some treated us better than others. I'll say that without getting into specifics. But I really enjoyed it and learned a lot from it, even if there were downsides and you were kind of on call all the time and only got paid when you got called in. So it was a little interesting.
Okay.
My boss was interesting. I'm not going to go into that during this podcast.
Okay.
But from there, I got a call. I was job searching, made it up to Haver. For 3.5 years, I worked at KOJM, KPQX, KRYK, broadcast Chinook Sugar Beater Sports, six-man football playoffs, a little bit of Haver Blue Pony Sports in there. I had a blast doing those games. It is a totally different environment, even than Minnesota or than Butte Haver is. I mean, you talk about the middle of nowhere. It's Glasgow's technically the middle of nowhere. So Haver is like almost the middle of nowhere.
How does one go from Minnesota to Harv?
They could take that train, couldn't they?
Oh, you could. You could take the train. Good call, Tom. Yeah,
thank you.
Good call.
Helmet sticker.
But no, I drove for the record. But I mean, it was a call. It was an offer. And an opportunity to move up if things presented themselves. And I really loved my time there.
Gotcha.
I thought, I mean, the people there, Haver gets a bad rep sometimes, but there's actually a lot of amazing people.
There are.
There's really cheap skiing when the skiing's open. There's bars with wings, which I like.
50 Paul McCartney's
cents on
band?
Sundays
oh, wait.
At Boxcars. I don't know if they still do that, but.
Bar, I think it was different. Bars with wings. That's the karaoke version.
Haver, you should hear him do Maybe I'm Amazed. And there go the lights.
So from a Haver, I got a DM from our former news director in at NBC Montana. He's like, are you interested? I'm like, yes, but I'm kind of going to be in this play first, this Shakespeare outdoors play. So I did that. I was murderer number 3 in Macbeth. And after I did that in 2022, which was a lot of fun, although I sprained my ankle jumping out of the trailer the night before the final matinee Sunday. But after all that, I end up moving to Butte. And I've been here for now going on 3 years. I absolutely love this community. I love the sports scene here, the passion people have.
Okay.
I love hearing your voice on broadcast, Paul. And hearing your voice on the radio when I'm driving to work or anywhere, Tommy.
Well,
I don't know. Was that was an odd, sincere thank you?
No, that really was. That means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So he's the one.
We had it narrowed down to 5 people, and that just saves me the whole afternoon of driving around. And
all right, before I get to you, Tom. I have so
yeah you probably have a lot of follow-ups.
I do do you have any follow-ups out of the gate? Because I want to start with, so you go from the first question I have as far as Minnesota goes, so John Thatcher, who is obviously my bodyguard, his son coaches in Wisconsin. Wisconsin basketball in high school does one of the coolest things I've ever heard of, is they don't have for regular season play, they have brackets. They have, you know, like a 5A to a 1A. Okay. But when it comes to the state tournament, they all play down to one. You don't have a 1A state tournament, a 5A state tournament. You have a state tournament or an A state champion. Does Minnesota do the same or no?
Not for basketball.
Okay.
I believe it's 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere in their divisions, that play for their own state title. Now, hockey's a different story. Hockey, there's only 2. There's A and AA. I think it used to be 1, of course.
Okay.
But I mean, I love when you can manage to get one state champion out of all of it. Even I know some states do. You win your class, you play in an all-class tournament. I think that's awesome.
Oh, that would be so good.
You know, especially last year, we had the chance to host Class C, which is the smallest here in Montana. And the Coach Jeremy McDonald and the Box Elder Bears, that is one of the best teams I've seen at any level. I would love to see a team like that, you know, play, you know, CMR, Missoula Hellgate,
exactly.
Billings Skyview. I don't think the AA school would be a favorite necessarily.
Well, and you know, you and I have talked about this a lot too, where you go back to like Belly's era at Manhattan Christian, you look at those Arlee teams at that time, like I would more than happily put those against some of those teams. But then you think about those the run that Sentinel had, and then you go into Hellgate, for goodness sake.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, they were so good and so talented. But anyway, we can discuss that further.
Well, if you think of just the Montana history, I mean, going back to Hellgate with, you know, I was in Missoula when they had their run. It was, I think, in 1992 with Ryan Dick and just a fantastic J.R. Camel. If we could combine all the classes and all the eras together, if we could somehow figure a way to do that, I think we could sell some tickets.
That would be very interesting. That would be very interesting. Let's go.
And hosted at the Civic Center, by the way.
Yeah, of course. It has to be. That is the only part of this that is non-negotiable. It has to be played. Like, if we do a big 32 like they used to, if we bring it, even just the state title winners in, and for one champion, it has to be at the Civic
Center. Or a three-on-three at the KC. That could work.
That's credence to that.
So you started writing for the high school. You went to, were you just broadcasting when you worked up at New Media, or was it?
I had a lot of different hats, obviously on air, broadcasting.
Well, small radio, that's the case. Yeah. So you have to.
I was news director for a few of those years and managed to do some sports in there. Now, I didn't help with sales. I couldn't sell a toothpick or, you know. I don't know if that's not a saying, but
it is now.
It's going to be.
One of those guys that, you know, you just ask your parents and your grandparents when you do the heart association jump rope for a cure. Can you help me get to the level where I get a cool toy? And then I'm not going to go to sell anything else. That was kind of where I was. But in terms of, new media broadcasters, I mean, it was a lot of reporting, and I remember, I mean, they get crazy snowstorms up there. I got stuck going to work once and had to put on my ski boots and walk into the office from about a football field away because we had about 18 inches of snow my first year there.
Oh, my goodness.
That is the one thread we all share, is we've all been, you know, in radio, and we've all done everything in radio except for sales.
Exactly.
Like, we all look at it, we're like, no, man, I can't, don't want to sell anything.
I gave it a shot real early, and it just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I can't sell things. But.
All right, Tommy, let's go to you, my friend. Give us the history and what got you to the place you're at currently.
Just, growing up in Butte, watching, sports in the Civic Center and sports on TV. You know, I for some reason had an interest in the announcers, and I remember a guy named Andy Vick Andy Jick was his name. He was the announcer for the Boston Celtics. And when I was, getting into watching basketball, and that was during the Bird McHale era. I'm sure Josh can expound on Kevin McHale later from Minnesota.
Oh, my gosh. Don't even. His general managing was not great.
Not now. But his postman was just, you couldn't touch.
The slippery eel.
I liked, okay, it kind of has a tie to Montana Tech. We, the Butte Central Maroons. I wasn't on the team, but I was in the stands. We had no business going to the state tournament in the spring of 1990, but they made a run, and Brooke Badovinic's dad was on the team.
Okay.
And through 4 years, there wasn't a high school announcer who got the name Badovinic right. And so we were in Brooke Breeden Fieldhouse, and I believe it was the Bobcats announcer at the time who was doing the state A, and he, Added forward, 6 foot, Brett Badovinic. It was like, wow, we got it right. And I don't know, that's just the whole atmosphere was exciting because the Maroons went to the state championship game, and just seeing the excitement that announcer added to the whole environment was kind of turned me on to it. And then, watching when the announcers would make the broadcast, like Andy Jick, and then later on, I think his name was Ray Clay for the Bulls. North Carolina. He's just, you know, just,
yeah.
I enjoy that. And, you know, being a small part of the game, I find is a lot of fun. And it's, you know, great seats. You can't beat the.
Yeah, the seats are awfully good. Seats are awfully good. What was the, when was the first time you called? Like, what was the first time you sat down in front of a microphone to do PA at a game?
It's right at, the following year after Bad Avena graduated.
Okay.
We were classmates in 90, and then it was the next year. Mark Beckman was the athletic director at Butte Central at the time, and I don't remember how I got the job, but he wound up giving me a shot, and he stuck with me for a while, and the Maroons had a lot of success. And they, my first year, they had Brandon Bodecker in the middle. They had Ryan Murphy, Sean Walsh, just a great team. And then the next year, they went on to win the championship, and I got to be a part of that as their home announcer, and it just it led to a job with the Butte Copper Kings.
Okay.
For a couple of summers, which in turn led to the radio job I have now, just kind of an indirect way.
The first iteration of the Copper Kings, or like, because they had like that, but just before I moved to Butte, there was the whole thing with the hot tub, right? But that was a new Copper Kings.
Yeah, no, that was the Tommyknockers.
Oh, Tommy, sorry.
Yeah, the Copper King. It was, yeah, there was no hot tub. there was a tin stadium. They also had bat night. If you remember that? That was fun.
Yes. What's a bat night?
They would give everybody in the stadium as one of the toy wooden bat as a souvenir when you came in,
and
then they
would spend the next 5 cent beer night.
It was almost as crazy as that. There was a story I can't tell it's true, but it involved Bill Dunmeyer.
Well, of course you can tell it. Come on,
Trajan Langdon. I don't know what happened, but Trajan Langdon, I think he played for Duke, and later also had a minor league career and wound up playing for the Idaho Falls Braves.
Okay.
And they had the misfortune of coming up here on quarter beer night, and Dunmeyer had done his homework and found out. Trajan Langdon, something happened with a guy named God Sham God, whose team put out Duke. Yeah, and Bill Dunmeyer retained this knowledge, not only through time but also through quarter beer night, and just led almost a near riot, from what I understand. It was I wasn't there, but it just is. It's what a great story. I'm never going to let being there be, you know, interfere with a good
story. You don't
want to
get in the way with a good story. No. You don't want to do that ever. So you were doing PA before you went to radio.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you've got over 30 years doing PA then.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And a lot different, because I mean, it was, you know, still in the Civic Center. The floor was different. They've made a lot of improvements, but you know, they didn't have CDs back then, and digital music. You know, you couldn't walk in with a computer. I had to bring in pre-cued cassette tapes and hope they would work, and they didn't always work, but it was technology has made that aspect a lot easier.
So actually, I want to get into technology, because that's something, okay, especially you and I, Tom, and Josh, you're not near as old and curmudgeonly as we are, so.
My mom has a laser disc.
Like the real big ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
She has Wizard of Oz on there and a couple other movies.
Weren't those so annoying that you still had to turn them over?
Yep.
You had to turn those over?
Yeah, you had to turn them over. Funny as that.
We didn't have a laser disc.
No, I went to somebody's house that did once. So give me the history. Tom got in a fight with his headphones and lost.
Being a Wizard of Oz, I think a tornado
hit
Tom.
What the heck just happened?
I tried to move my microphone so I could clear my throat, and it just went to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, that went downhill bad.
I lost my hat
and you work with microphones every day.
Well, not one that's coming out of my head.
So give me the path from PA announcer through the Copper Kings and how it got you into radio then. Because I assume that they were both hand in hand, but yeah, when we start talking timeline, obviously that's not the case.
A guy named Bob Toole, who ran the River over in Deer Lodge for a while until he passed away. He was originally, when I met him, he was working for I think it was, what was it, KMBR? It was KMBR.
But okay.
It was at the time Fisher Broadcasting. It's now Carr, KMBR, KXTL, and Dave. But he was, I think he was doing a radio remote at one of the games where I was the PA announcer.
Oh.
And I just kind of struck up a relationship. And then later, he had left the group and started his own station in Deer Lodge. And I applied for the job, and he remembered me through that. And then I wound up starting radio there through his station. And then I wound up over here in Butte.
Okay.
Was able to keep, you know, doing Butte Central games, and then a few tech games here and there, and the Copper Kings left, and it led to the thing you see here today, Paul.
I want to get into, like, yeah, we'll talk history and as far as who you've done games for, and we'll certainly continue to talk about that. But history wise, that's pretty interesting. I don't think I would have.
That was really set together roundabout path. I never really set out directly to get into radio. Just it just happened.
It was yeah. The idea of you wanted to do PA first.
Yeah, that was always my passion. I kind of wanted to get into play by play, but that never worked out. And I just never really had the talent for it too much. And but I doing what I do now is more fulfilling. I love what I do. I love the being right on top of the action, hearing the coaches, mm-hmm. and it's just it's a good setup. It's a lot of fun, especially when the hyper is packed, which it usually is, and Coach Hyatt's fired up and the crowd's going. It's so much. You just can't express how much fun that is.
So Josh, yeah. Being the man of all the talent, where you're looking at the idea of writing, radio, TV. Which did you have your goal set on one of those coming out of high school, or even just internally? Did you want to get to one of them and stay there, or what was the plan?
Gosh, that's a great question. I guess if I could choose one, I would just love to do play-by-play for a team. Like, I would be like Timberwolves Radio or Timberwolves. I'm just a huge Wolves fan, so I was a season ticket holder, and we never finished 500 in the 13 years I had season tickets. But I would love to do play-by-play for a team, like follow them around. That would be my dream job, being a beat writer or a beat reporter, kind of a close second there. And I kind of get to do that with being in Butte, following Tech and the Maroons and Butte High, and seeing how they change year after year and covering them from preseason through the end of the season into the off season. So that's kind of what I love best, is being able to kind of follow a team like that, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, completely. Absolutely. It does, and especially for the three of us, I think that resonates across the board.
Yeah.
So. I find that really interesting, the idea of being on all three sides of it, because when Tom and I worked together, I had to write, we had to write, and I certainly in my current job have to write every once in a while. I would never call myself a writer.
Right.
Like I don't think I was ever proud of anything I wrote, if I'm going to get right down to in therapeutic about it. I don't know if I was ever proud of anything along those lines. You?
I kind of enjoy writing, and unfortunately that also has become part of my job now.
Yeah.
But it's never really been a challenge. But I find sometimes I overthink things, or don't think them through enough. Whereas like with radio, it's just one shot and you're done.
I have a feeling that's how I would be with segments as far as TV as well. Like I would just overthink everything, and I think that's why I can do play-by-play, possibly, is the fact that I can just go and not think about it.
I love that, yeah.
Yeah, because the idea of putting too much thought in it or redoing things in that, I would just be awful.
To an extent, when I watch some of the national broadcasts, some of them almost like they have phrases that they're just waiting to use. Like they had it written down before the game. Like a quick, cute little thing with a player's name. That drives me up a wall.
The competition is heating up.
Oh. Do you have statements or things that drive you crazy?
Not, gosh, God, that's a great question. I have a lot of things that drive me crazy. But
let's start here. So Tom obviously talked about the guys that got him into PA.
Yeah.
Who are the people that motivate you? Even today, and we'll get to you in a sec too, sure. Tommy. But Josh, who are the people that you go, they are really good at their craft and that make you better at what you do?
So a lot of them are Minnesota-based or Indiana-based, but I would say
I'm seeing a trend here.
Mm-hmm. Perkins.
Okay.
He just retired pretty recently, sportscaster for KR11, the NBC station out in the Twin Cities. Just has so much fun with everything he does, finds incredibly creative ways to get players engaged and make them relatable to the audience while also doing serious reporting at times as well. So I'd say Eric Perkins is definitely near the top. And then, when I think of some of the great play-by-play guys, Alan Horton with the Timberwolves, Don Fisher, and Mark Boyle with the Hoosiers and the Pacers, respectively. Paul Panisco with Montana Tech Athletics.
You don't have to suck up. You're on the show no matter what. You're fine.
I know we're on a video, but what an attractive man as well.
But honestly, even when I worked in Haverhill, a sports director at the time, Ron Bruschi, always commented, you're one of, if not the best play-by-play guy in the state.
And Bruschi and I had fun. I liked
loved,
Ron a lot.
When we had the opportunity to have you on our airwaves when the Diggers played Montana, MSU Northern.
Well, and it's funny how that works because I think in all of our jobs, there are people you trust. And then, unfortunately, mm-hmm. there are people you don't. Mm-hmm. And there are times where if you're unable to make the trip or you're not going and you need to get what we always call the feed, and a feed is when you call, say I called Helena, and I had to get a hold of somebody in Helena to do a Butte High game for me, or I've never had to call for a Tech Carroll game, thankfully. But where you would call someone and there are times, and you certainly don't want to say anybody, but there are times where you're like, man, I kind of cringe at the what kind of game I'm going to get. And you guys were always great. And I always really enjoyed getting games off the high line. Obviously Bruschi and I have known each other forever.
He's a fun character. You gotta get warmed up to him.
He is a character. Yes.
He's gotta get warmed up to you mostly.
Yes.
But.
Yeah. He is definitely a character by all means. Who else? So as time has gone, Tom, you have been around a while. We're old, dude. Yeah, like we are old. But so as time's gone, when you think about PA announcing, mm-hmm. who are the people that you look up to? Because I really want to get to the idea of, can you actually watch a game normally anymore? And we'll get to that in a minute. But who are the people that you're like, yeah, they do a really good job?
Or
places, for that matter.
Dan Roberts from the Utah Jazz, I think he's still doing the games, but he's, you know, they're relatively close to Butte, so we've had a lot of chances to go down and see the Utah Jazz, and he's phenomenal. I don't know the gentleman's name, but he did Seattle Supersonics in the mid-90s when they made their championship run. Yep. He was another guy we went over to see. And just two different styles. Seattle, I wish I knew his name. The guy who did the Sonics, he was just very laid back, really, but just had just a really cool inflection. So I've tried to steal equally from both of those guys.
And honestly, let's go there because that in my opinion is part of media. You take what you really enjoy from people, mm-hmm. the parts of whether it's writing, whether it's PA, whether it's play by play. Everybody rips somebody off because they're like, oh, that's fantastic. Like I need to use that. Or for me, it's like terms of spots on a floor. That's the part,
yeah,
you know, because,
well,
you know, Josh, I look at you and you're so basketball oriented.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I mean, I really enjoy calling basketball. And if I'm being honest, I think I call a better basketball game than I do a football game. But it's just the speed. Like I think I'm very comfortable at fast speeds. But I do pick a whole lot of stuff from watching NCAA tournament, from listening to the NCAA tournament. You're like, oh, that's good. You know, and I benefit from and having JT with me. You know, I mean, JT has forgotten more today than I'll ever know about basketball.
JT's amazing. He's probably the reason I started watching, you know, basketball to begin with. He was the coach. my father was he graduated from Butte Central in 1967. So he was young father in 1978, took me down to the state tournament in Billings. JT was the coach. I'll never forget it. My dad got a hold of him, and Coach Thatcher says, yeah, bring the kid down to the hotel. So we went to where the Maroons were staying. I remember going there with a notepad. I got to meet the whole team. There was a guy named Ray J. Johnson, point guard. I love the guy. I hadn't seen him since then, but I just remember the curly hair and the eyebrows and he was just smooth. They had a big center named Bill O'Leary, who I just big number 54, and I loved him because he would foul out in the second quarter of every game. He was great.
Yeah.
But I got to meet them. Thatcher let me, hang around for like 5 minutes, and it was like meeting the Lakers. It was phenomenal, and that just they went on to win the tournament, which made it more exciting, and then it just kind of, I guess, lit the fire.
Yeah.
For basketball, for me, anyways.
There are so many, and I love my time with JT so much, and I look forward to talking to him daily. You know, whenever I can pester him, I do. But he, the stories he'll give you, he's one of those. So I'm a big fan of. There's a movie called Big Fish. Have you ever heard of Big Fish?
Possibly,
but it's basically like a Big Fish story type of deal where the kid thinks that everything that he's heard about his dad is all BS. You know, you're like, oh, these are all so, everything is so grand. Like, that didn't happen.
Who's
that's
in that
such
movie?
A load of crap.
I haven't seen it. It's a
Tim Burton movie.
Okay, I need to see it then.
It's fantastic. But that's how I was with JT. You know, JT and I started calling games together. And I remember it was the year that he was done at Butte High. He was in talking to my boss at the time. And I walked in and I was like, and JT and my mom were real tight. They've been friends forever. And so therefore it gave me just a hair of latitude, you know, just a tiny little bit. And he was sitting in the office and, he goes, well, at the time I was just calling Butte High by myself. And before I had been with Pat Shelty and, you know, I was calling games by myself and JT's like, so, when are you going to have me call games with you? I'm like, well, when the season starts, you're on. And like, that was it. And that was our introduction. And, him calling games for like 15 years was just, oh yeah, by the way, guess what? You're doing games with me. That's all there is to it. But all the stories, I remember one with Ray J, that year when they win the state title, Ray J was running point. And I don't remember what we'll get JT in to talk about the specifics, but it was something along the lines of, I think Ray J turned the ball over once and was so mad at himself during that season. And he's like, you know, I'm always out dribbling. I'm working on my ball control. And that's just who he is. Like he's going to commit himself 100%. And JT told him something along the lines of, well, take your basketballs. I want you to have two of them. I want you to dribble two basketballs down the interstate to like Anaconda or something and back as like penance, if you will. And it, like Ray J was starting to, like somebody found him on the highway. No. They're like, dude, get off the road. Like I was just telling you to work on your things, not to actually do
they
it for
it
goodness
to the
sake.
Walker or the Rocker McDonald's.
For JT, that would be the stopping point for sure. But anyway, I can certainly talk about it. I'm so lucky with the guys I work with. And that's something that we all, I think that's a big part of everything we do as far as media goes. I think you get your relationships and, you know, you look at those people that have shaped you. And I talk about stealing stuff for PA, but I think that goes with all of it. You know, you look at, I assume that there are people, not only Minnesota, but also Montana that have shaped you tremendously that you have quote unquote stolen from and have gotten better because of them.
Is that's for me now to
that's
talk?
For you now to, sorry.
Gosh. I mean, yeah.
Did he just tell me to shut up?
No, that yeah, that
was,
no.
That's just, the way I heard that, wasn't
my
it?
My brain is processing.
I never thought you'd shut up, Panisco.
No.
I was thinking that, but then it came through my earpiece, and I don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you watch enough news, and you definitely have people that you like to listen to, and you, I don't know, emulate's the right word, but take things from and watch how they work. I mean, being at the Capitol a little bit during the legislative session this past year, I learned a whole lot from Jonathan Amberry, and I think he might be the best pure political TV reporter in the state. His relationships with both parties and with other journalists, just absolutely first class. You know, Maritza Giorgio, when she was at NBC Montana, I followed her work, and now she's got her podcast and all of that stuff. Boyd Hooper, I guess, not really on the politics side, but in Minnesota, some of his feature stories were, you know, Emmy worthy. I think he won a bunch of regional Emmys for them, but just the way he would tell stories and introduce them and throw in the natural sound of it all, just really beautiful. And it's about putting someone in the scene, making them feel a connection, whether that be, you know, emotionally or mentally or what have you. And making sure that you're being accurate, you're being honest, you're not hyperbolizing, and you're having some fun with it if it's something that's not quite so serious.
Yeah, yeah. Does with the amount of political and community, you know, I think every media source has continued to shrink as
yes.
time has gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about
me and Tommy work in the same building.
Exactly. And I worked in that building for a year as well. And I'm not sure we ever saw each other. But you know, the idea of the old newsrooms, you know, where you'd have all these people and you'd have sports reporters, multiple, and you'd have, you know, across the board. And as things continue to get smaller and smaller and smaller. I mean, for a time, you two are the only two, I think, that entire building, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah.
No, we could have had our Christmas party last year in a phone booth.
If we could have found a phone booth. We might have to explain to some people what a phone booth is.
Helena's got some phone booths in the Capitol.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Nice.
In the ante room.
But the one thing I was going to compliment you about, and the one thing I really appreciate about you, Josh, is how well you have kind of picked that up, the mantle of, well, I guess I'm a political reporter. I'm a local reporter. Has that rounded you more? I mean, were you more sports-driven, or has it always been kind of community-based and the political stuff? Was that also always been kind of a part of you?
Yes and yes. Okay. When I was in college, I made it part of my goal to be as well-rounded as possible. I interned for the NPR PBS station for about 2 years and did a bunch of political and general news stories. So that
for NPR?
The local, yeah.
Come NPR, on, man. PBS let's hear your station. Let's hear your NPR voice.
Oh, gosh. I can't. I don't know. I don't
anyway,
know if
I'm just,
I
have
I'm
an kidding,
NPR
dude,
voice.
I'm just kidding.
This is NPR. I don't know. Is that good?
That was solid. That was all right.
I just mostly listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I really, that's not your typical NPR.
Yeah, solid. Solid. And I think maybe that's why you shouldn't be involved in this conversation because, I mean, Tom and I are like music and sports. Mm-hmm. Did I miss anything?
No, that's pretty much
pretty much our lives. The idea of either of us, when we are forced to do anything outside of those spectrums, we certainly can do it. But I don't think we go at it with the same vigor that you do. So no. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's you get to learn a lot. I mean, the world isn't all sports, unfortunately, and isn't all music. So. There are other things going on. I just remember my first story when I was with the NPR PBS station was like a bed bug forum, and I learned so much about bed bugs in those 3 hours.
I learned differently.
He learned from when you have the wristband and you're called patient.
Yeah. Where was that at?
Those were different bugs too. There, we probably shouldn't even get into that.
No, it was a different radio station.
I think it's impressive. And give us the take. So let's talk technology and even the different veins of media now where, you know, we grew up in a world where, honestly, we were kind of at the back end of radio where, you know, everybody turned to radio for everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And I will say that when I was on KBOW, that, you know, and I think when you were at New Media, that still was a pretty big significant area where people turn on a station. And Tom, you're certainly you're an absolute pillar of Butte, Montana and radio where people turn on to hear what's going on. You know, if there's smoke, like you see smoke out by Fleecer, the first thing people do is turn on the radio to find out what that is about. You know, and TV certainly has a big niche in that, you know, for a certain amount of time. But we're turning to an era where it's social media is where people are turning. Whether they're getting the right answer or not is a really good question across the board. But the idea of changing from, you know, TV reports to, you know, you're doing a lot, Josh, as far as social media updates, a lot of stuff on it's still Twitter and always will be. That's my age. But talk about that kind of shift.
I've kind of always been in the social media realm because there's no broadcast area. Anybody, I mean, you could be in Iceland and read my tweets about the chicken laws locally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, gosh, I don't know where I'm quite going with this, but and radio is king and definitely still in lots of places in Montana, particularly up in Haver. You got a lot of people working on the farm that listen to the radio. But it's kind of, for me, making the content so it can be digested multiple ways and people have a way to find it, whether that's just listening to the radio, whether that's following me on social media, whether that's going on our website. It's kind of checking all the boxes because I guess the internet probably is the main news source for most people these days, maybe less so in Montana. Mm-hmm. But it's still vital to have multiple ways for people to reach you.
Tom, give me your take on the arc of radio. I mean, it's...
Well,
please. I was going to go on it.
Right on the head with how social media is really starting to take over things, and it's what's dangerous is that radio as an industry is trying to almost chase social media as a business. And so I think as an effect... I just see with our internet, I mean, we are seeing ratings overall from terrestrial radio going down. And as I guess as an industry trying to make that switch to where your stream can be picked up. But with that is going to come your website and how many people go to your website, and there are outside income sources that go into that, which leads to chasing page clicks. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times with what I see is sometimes it's more clickbaity than really meaty, as you know, as far as the news goes. You're getting something that's going to get a lot of clicks but isn't really doing anything, whereas some of the things that do serve a purpose just aren't interesting enough to click on.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the same with me. Like, I'll do like a hard news story that I put a lot of time and effort into, and it'll, you know, you look at the Facebook post and it's got 3 shares.
Yeah.
But you post Butte's getting a Chick-fil-A and it's 80 shares in 5 minutes.
No, exactly.
It's disheartening a little bit sometimes.
It really is, because, I mean, I'm not an example right now. I've been, you know, trying to put, you know, a lot of community events. Here's what's happening. We got a lot of things, even charitable type things that just don't. But I put up a thing on what's Montana's favorite flavor of Coca-Cola that, you know,
which is it?
Cherry Coke.
Really?
Yeah. For me, it is Coca-Cola Zero.
Oh. I can. Oh.
Smelled it everywhere.
Really?
Pardon me, Paul.
You spilled Coke all over our Hall of Fame lounge.
I'll clean those plaques. I'm sorry.
about how you deal with that stuff. I mean, because I look at your arc as far as radio, Tom, and you are, in my opinion, you're an absolute pillar of Butte. Like, everybody knows who you are. Everybody has listened to you. Everybody, I mean, you have been part of people's lives forever.
Thank you.
And I that was kind of an old joke, and I apologize, but you really have been. I mean, when I think of the people that I look up to when I started radio, you know, you've got people that names like Dave Levin on your side of the street, and on our side of the street where we use completely different weapons, you know, like Tim Beggs, BJ McKenzie,
uh-huh.
Were people that I know and I love and I thankfully still talk to, but are always going to be better than I was. You know, did you?
Yeah,
feel that pressure?
I listen to you and Shannon all the time, man. You guys
speaking of somebody I'm not even on her radar. Like, she's so much better at the game than I ever was. But dealing with the changes, I mean, because obviously every business, every person has days where they get out of bed and they're like, man, I don't want to go to work. But when you're going with good people and people you like, and it makes it so much better when you're like, oh, we're going to have some fun.
I had that when, you know, the year we were together was a blast, one of the highlights of my career. And I had that to the same extent earlier with when I was first coming in with Arch Ecker, the Arch man. And radio was a lot more live then. It was a lot more active. And that guy was so quick. He was so funny. But he was also very smart. And the way he could just combine them, it's, you know, it was like if I could one day be, you know, as good as the Arch man. I miss him. He passed away a couple years ago, and just like a brother.
And he's one that, you know, I'm glad that in our time that you and I worked together, you taught me an awful lot about him, because when I worked at the other radio stations, it was always like you guys were the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily I knew you enough that wasn't the case. But almost everybody else in the building was, man. Like, and I feel awful about it. You know, it just, I don't know if it's the competition bred into me, the person I am, or what. I'm glad I'm different now. But yeah, I never truly knew Arch at all, ever.
Oh, you would have loved him. If we could have gotten the three of us on just one show, we would all be doing something
so
different today.
But let's talk about, I mean, how is your on-air changed? You know, and obviously we're getting away from the PA, but that's, I want to talk about how, like, even in your opinion, how your day-to-day has changed through the years, and how, Maybe that segues into technology, and maybe that's our next step. But how has day-to-day changed for you as far as Butte Radio goes?
Well, you know, for example, the whole industry's gotten smaller. So a lot of the radio production for commercials and that is done in different markets in the company, which, you know, that would rarely happen when I first started.
Yeah.
The use of the internet is you know, staying up to speed on what people are doing online and trying to, you know, what's hot in Butte, what are people talking about, and trying to, you know, gear things towards that. That was a foreign concept when I started. Even, yeah, when I first started radio, I mean, we were getting, I remember the 9/11, I think I still got them tucked away, but I was getting the ticker tape on the off the AP
wire. Yeah, still the AP wire.
9/11, just yes. Some of the, I remember them saying that I've got one somewhere that said Walt Disney World was hit. So just, you know, just yeah. Strange thing. But, you know, now you still get the same disinformation, you just get it digitally.
Yeah. But,
also, the way the music's played. I mean, when I first started, CDs weren't out of, it wasn't unreasonable to be expected to know how to use multiple CD players, and now you won't even find a CD player in a studio.
Or did you have a cart player in studio?
Yeah, but it wasn't used very much at all. Those, okay. And the carts, and also I was coming to the very end where if you needed to make an edit on a tape, you'd splice it
yep.
Manually with a razor blade.
Yep.
I couldn't do that. Everything digital, everything like the Adobe Audition program has made things just so. Yeah, there we are. It's amazing. It's amazing what you can, and even the stuff that you and I and our lack of knowledge. I mean, we're only scratching the surface of that.
Oh, completely. So take that over to when you talk technology. Talk about how that has changed for PA, because you were doing PA announcing before, and we get so used to music and the fact that you control the energy of a crowd so much, and you do it so well. Talk about that a little bit on you know, I mean, we're so spoiled now where you've got a computer, a Spotify or CDs, but how did it start? Like what were you doing music wise in a gym before?
I'd come in with cassettes, like I said, and if, you know, you can kind of tell when the other team's on the ropes a little bit and they're, especially when you got a team, like I'm thinking back to 1992 when you've got, you know, Sean Walsh, Ryan Murphy, and just a team that would put up 100 points. They did it, I think, 3 times that year. So, I mean, they would go on runs that would cause the other team to, you know, they just needed to call a timeout. So you need to keep that energy from the crowd because they were getting, you know, 3,000 people a game, and they were, you don't want, you know, timeouts called in silence. You know, one that always I used to use was like the Isley Brothers with Shout, where you just hear, wah! And then much more in tune than that. But, you know, that or just something up, just an upbeat song, which, of course, that you got to kind of stay with the times, and which is hard to do as you get older. You just don't know what's popular. But
so how would you use the cassettes then? Like, give me a rundown on would you have multiples?
We have multiples. It'd be, I'd have
would you have full songs queued up, or would you only have segments of songs?
If you wanted to, like, I remember I used to use a Bobby Brown ad. That might be dating us.
Okay.
But
the one where he was dancing in front of his own name?
It was only in my head. It was only, yeah.
Gotcha.
I think it was. But I didn't want the, you know, him to come in singing over the, you know, as I'm only on the third player through the starting lineup introductions.
Yeah.
So I'd have to kind of make a dub. But there was no Adobe Edition, so I'd just use a cassette, like a dual cassette player, and do it horribly. And it didn't, it was passable, but anybody who wanted to get, you know. And now if I needed to do that, I could just make a, you know, I've got an Inner Sandman loop I use for the Digger football team that's 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
That I made in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Me and James Hetfield in my garage.
We're pals.
With a Marshall stack.
Yeah. So how long were you doing cassettes? And how long did it take you to learn that? Because that obviously is something that comes out of necessity where you're like, oh, man, there's a timeout and it's dead silent. The idea of keeping people alive and keeping the energy high, that transition and that learning curve has to be pretty steep.
Well, it just seems, I don't know, I've always had music
pretty
with
natural.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's never really been a challenge, and it's gotten much easier with sound. I mean, right now Spotify is just, it's unbelievable. And just, you know, I've had it bomb a couple times too, where you think the song's going to work and it's actually worse than dead air, but
yeah,
you know, you live, you learn.
Yeah.
What's the worst song choice you've made during a game when you've been doing PA and you're like, oh, I really regret that?
I remember one instance, and I'll go there. But what's your thought?
Well, early in my career, I think I used the Bugs Bunny theme, like, ba-dee-ba-dee, that's all, folks. It was like in the second quarter. It was pretty tasteless looking back on it. So I feel bad about that.
Okay,
but I was right.
The one time I remember that you went from crickets almost to having the entire joint like eating out of the palm of your hand was when we did the kids game a year ago, and you were kind of using our, let's say, quote unquote, kind of normal music for a game.
Yeah.
And then you went to like
Baby Shark
Attack, yeah, right. Baby Shark. Yeah. And it was the craziest change I ever remember in a gym, because it was, you know, the kids were obviously having a good time otherwise, but the music and the energy was not their music and or energy. When you hit their music and energy, it was fourth grade teacher's worst nightmare. Like, it was nuts.
I'm still in trouble. It was, as far as atmosphere goes, I will
put that was one of the best
kids games. I've done state championship games at all levels. I've done Montana Grizzly games. It was just incredible. The kids were totally into it. They were dancing and doing, you know, with YMCA and just, you know, I had the advantage. I've done a lot of weddings as a DJ, so you learn which songs work, and if you can find things that people can dance to in a group, you just run with it, and it that was so much fun. We're doing it again this year, aren't we?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, and it's been kind of difficult because the scheduling this year has been tough, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's less conference. There's more conference games, less chance for non-con, which is usually when you schedule a kids' day.
Yeah, because usually it's early in the day so you can get kids out of school, because that's obviously a big part of it, is getting the kids out of school and getting them up here. So that's the difficult part now is, you know, we have so many conference games, something that was not a luxury we had over the last 20 years.
You want a home court advantage? Why don't we have kids' day when we host Carol?
play Carol at noon on a Friday.
let's just see what happens.
Let's go. It's on. What are other songs that you're like when it's dead or when something happens? What are the things that you pull out of your bag? You've got to have a good bag of tricks, if you will, where you're like this for this crowd, whether it's the Central crowd, the Butte High crowd, the Tech crowd. What are the ones that you're like, yep, that's fantastic?
Oh, you know, they're very similar. I mean, it's Butte High, The Stroke, unquestionably.
Where did that come from?
I don't. That's been part of it. It's going on. It has to be a couple decades.
Yeah.
They're just using that, and it just works. And,
yeah.
And people get into it, and that's exactly what you want. It's really hard. You know, that's a very good question. You know, sometimes a good classic rock song with an intro, like the start of You Shook Me All Night Long, will work. Or even going back to something you'd use for like starting lineups, if you just use Sirius from the Alan Parsons Project where it builds, sometimes that can work.
Okay.
It's hard. I mean, and it kind of, you have to feel the crowd, Paul.
Well, and there's... It's so silly saying that, but it's so true. I mean, you have to know who you're playing to. You have to know situational and
just, you know,
the age of crowd is going to be a big difference.
Absolutely. I mean, you can classic rock usually works, and I'll come with a page or so of that. But also, you got to know what's like a good hip hop song or you know.
Yes, lots of good hip hop songs.
Oh yeah, I mean that. Like,
but you got to be careful with those.
Well, a lot of times Spotify just they have a little E on it.
Yeah, yes.
That means explicit, and I found that out the hard way.
Oh no!
which gym did that happen in?
If you want the best story,
let's go.
Okay, yes. this is actually.
And just so you know, there is an E on the podcast as well.
For
and the first
last
person,
episode, yeah.
It was the last episode. The chancellor is the first person I had to drop the explicit on. The chancellor.
Well,
so you're fine.
So
continue.
Mining
go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're going back about 10 years in radio when we were, you know, taken over by a different corporation for the fifth time. New song man, you know, a guy in charge of our entire song inventory, and it turns out KMBR doesn't have a lot of the songs that they're going to schedule.
Okay.
But at the same time, cook number 7 in the kitchen says you don't have time to be doing all this, so you can just go through YouTube and you can drag and drop, and it's going to convert the MP3 to a file that's compatible for our system. So we had this happen. Okay. So by this time, I'm already stressed, over, you know, a song that's going to play three times. So one of the songs that we don't have is a little ditty called Red Sector A by Rush, which is a phenomenal song.
Okay.
It turns out I wasn't very familiar with YouTube.
So
I got, and I didn't listen to the whole song like they said and all. The only thing that I saw is, wow, this seems like it's kind of a long song to be playing. I had downloaded a version that someone else had put up that wasn't from the website or the record label. It was using the song as background to the scene in Band of Brothers where they liberated the concentration camp. So there was some spicy language that was on this recording that I had put in to the KMBR system unknowingly. So a couple of days later, I'm driving down the street in the KMBR van with people, you know, pointing and laughing as they generally did.
Yep.
Red Sector A comes on. And all of a sudden it gets to the point, and then somewhere everything drops out. They go to and they used racial slurs, they used F-bombs, there was gunshots, and there was me almost causing a wreck.
I was going to say, what speed did you get up to on the way to the studio?
It was kind of like when you find out your dog died. Everything just slows down, and you don't really... And then all of a sudden, you realize you're parked at a green light. And, yeah, I went back. And,
wow.
Thankfully, though, by the time I got back to the station, the full song had played. So
that's a good thing.
So, I'll be on it too this afternoon.
All right, Josh, let's turn the spotlight to you, sir.
I don't have a good story like that.
You don't have a good story?
Let's see what the question
is. There are things that, and I think that you laugh about, but you look at when you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, I am the biggest dumbass for letting that happen. I assume everybody in media has hundreds of those. I hope so, because I do. Do you have any of those times where you want to just kick yourself in the butt for doing something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I mean, probably the worst mistake I've made here in Butte was I wasn't able to make like a meeting of the Animal Services Board. I checked the minutes, but it was actually the minutes from the previous meeting. But it had the date of the recent date of the current meeting, and so I didn't make any calls or anything to double check or confirm, and that was just such, I mean, it's not funny like Tommy's story at all, but you know, you got to do cleanup on aisle 6 in that situation, and you just feel awful.
Yeah,
I mean, there's, and you live and you learn, but you, in journalism especially, shortcuts, I mean, can be the end of your career if you take them the wrong way.
Yeah. How long did it take you to get, are you comfortable in front of a camera? Or is it still you have to give yourself the pep talk to do it?
It's really, you don't think about it, I guess. You just get up,
just do it
in front of the camera, shoot your stand-up, make sure your hair looks okay, which sometimes I forget, and you're done with it. I guess it's kind of like, I guess the best advice I got is kind of the advice they give everybody, like act like the camera's just a viewer, or just a person. Look into it, smile, have fun, be friendly. That kind of thing. So
that's funny.
You just kind of think of it as like talking to Tommy, I guess, a little bit. If the camera's Tommy,
and I'll tell you the best bit of advice I ever received in radio was Dennis John Nettles, who is another guy that I just look up to immensely in town. And he had always said that when you're reading news or you're on the air, for me, is that you're always do it as though you're talking to one person. That there is somebody sitting across the table from you, that you are talking to that person, and they need to know what you're talking about. And I've always taken that to heart.
Dennis John was another just legend. He was so, you know, in radio and TV.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing he couldn't have done. He
was, no, not even remotely.
I knew him outside of radio, and he was, you know, even to a clown like me working at a casino, he was always just a really good guy.
Yeah.
And a pleasure to be around.
Yeah. Good stuff. So then from there, all right, let's talk about, how do you keep yourself somewhat because we're all obviously we're in Butte, and you know, Josh, you're in enough of our gyms. You know the family's good enough. I mean, you are neck deep in this as we are, to be completely honest.
Not quite as deep as you, but yeah.
But there still is a level of professionalism where you can't show your opinion one way or the other. Like you try not to be as excited in some situations, and especially for you. Again, we're talking about a small building. You know, you're responsible for a heck of a lot more than Montana Tech. You're responsible for more than Butte Central and Butte High. There is a much bigger umbrella that you have to cover. So walking kind of a fine line, it has to be kind of hard at times.
I do think so, but at the same time, I'm just myself a lot of the time. I mean, if I see a crazy play, I'm going to make a weird face, you know, like a face of amazement or something. I mean, right, you can't – there's no – obviously, you're not cheering for a team, one team or the other. But I think it's important to enjoy the moment, to smile when you see people and be cordial and have fun. I guess, is that an okay answer?
That's,
I don't know.
No, you nailed it. You absolutely.
It's okay to show emotion, but it's not okay to be partisan.
Mm-hmm. No, but be yourself. And that's what endears me, you know, as a viewer when I watch your stuff. It's,
thank you.
And your eyes.
They're blue.
I'm just going to go over here for a little bit. All right. So talk about that same kind of thing on PA, Tom. I mean, is it hard to not show favoritism? Because
no, I don't. Well, I mean, almost in my job, I'm almost encouraged to. Yes. I mean, I'm in a home gym, so I mean, I'm going and I've. You know, I've had that, you know, work against me as well. I mean, there's been a couple times where I've, you know, a city championship game or something where I'm leaning one way or the other, and
that's tough. Parents realize it.
There were a couple times, yeah, it was pretty good. But you know, and I'm doing both schools. I know the families. I mean, these are now, you know, kids of my friends, and it's just it's. I mean, I'm older, and but like in a setting like Tech, like for a Tech Western game, it's going to be. There's going to be no question who I'm for, and then that's part of that. That probably, I hope it adds to the excitement. I hope it doesn't, you know, get too over the top, but it does. It's just such a fun environment, and it's kind of dangerous to have that much kind of freedom. You know, almost you don't want to overdo it, and then I think a lot of times that can be done, but I don't know. I'm still looking for that happy medium.
Well, I love the fact that it's still you still look for ways to improve. I think that's a huge factor. You know, that idea of always adjusting, always changing, always moving forward. And I think that shows.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's unconscious if that it's happening that way, but
subconscious. It's not unconscious.
Well, he is unconscious a lot. I mean, you work in that building. You should just go over and look every once in a while.
Just give a good thump on that wall. And say, it'll just wake me up.
What you bring up, both of you have kind of alluded to when we get negative comments.
Yeah.
How do you handle – how are you able to handle criticism well? And
no.
How do you handle it? You know, kind of give us that, Tommy. Since I'm looking at you first, talk about like the idea of – taking criticism, and then we'll talk about compliments and stuff later, but I don't think we ever want to talk about that stuff anyway. It always comes down to people that are like ripping our face off for saying something wrong or doing something wrong. Are you able to handle that well?
No, not at all. No, I should handle it a lot better, but it bothers me. But a lot of times, if there's a criticism, there's probably a little truth behind it.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, it was the State A semifinals.
Okay.
In Butte. And it's Butte Central versus Fergus. And, I mean, we know the history there. The year before that, Dougie Peoples beat Fergus at the buzzer in the state championship. And two programs who don't see themselves – or that don't see them – see each other during the regular season. If they're going to meet, it's going to be in the state tournament.
Yes.
So Butte Central and Fergus met in the semis. I was a PA announcer, and I favored Butte Central. I don't think – I thought I – was a lot better than I was, but it really rubbed a lot of Fergus fans the wrong way, and they complained to the Civic Center manager.
Okay.
And they didn't want me to do the championship game, which that hurt, but I don't know. You got to look back, and you got to almost say if they're complaining, there was a reason. And I'm sure that I was more than a little biased for Butte Central.
Okay.
Because, it's hard to be an announcer when you're the fan as well and remain neutral. In a setting like that, and that's part of the job, and I was in the wrong.
Look at you go!
Wasn't that big?
That was growth.
Did I read that right? No,
I think your parole officer is going to be very happy with that answer. We'll make sure that it gets to the proper sources. I would have to think Josh, you get a lot more criticism than either of us do. And I'm not saying that because of any of your personal issues or anything. I'm just saying that because I feel like...
No,
like
despite my personal issues.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, just to add on to them. But I feel like... I feel like news people, period. I think anybody who is reporting the news, especially in today's day and age, for goodness sake, there are people that are going to either disagree with you because you're not hard enough, and there are other people are going to disagree with you because you were wrong. I feel like it's a hard thing to do right now is to report the news, whether it's local, national, whatever the case is, and not have people like tear you down and go after you. Is criticism hard?
Well, first I'll say the majority of criticism when it comes to like TV news, it ends up going to the anchors and it's completely unfair. It's a lot of superficial stuff like, oh, I don't like the way you look or the way you sound or your cadence. Stuff like that would really bother me if I was an anchor. But when it comes to criticisms, I mean, I ignore the ones on Facebook for the most part. I tried to respond to one and I held off on it recently. It depends on the content of the criticism. I mean, sometimes it's valid and you email them back and you're like, I completely understand where you're coming from and I'll look into that or I'll be more careful or I'll consider that perspective next time, things like that. But if, you know, there's always a line that you can feel like if it goes into disrespect where I'm not going to respond, I'm going to push it to the side. If it's bad enough, I will just post it on my social accounts for people to roast and make me feel better about myself.
Exactly. That's the key. And Facebook messaging, or not messaging, but responses on Facebook are, if you get, and everybody will, if you start falling down that rabbit hole, it's awful.
Yes.
I mean, things that are said there are just awful. It's incredible. All right. So let's turn the coin then. And what is the... What is the best compliment you have ever received?
Tommy, when he's just said my eyes look nice.
Okay, I'll leave you guys alone again for a little bit.
No, I would say the best compliments are when people tell me, you know, that I made a difference, honestly. If I do a story and people pay attention and it leads to change and they thank me for it or, you know, somebody maybe wasn't aware of something until I made them so. And those, you know, those are the kind of things that really warm my heart the most is when you can present something in a lens that makes people either think differently or just makes them think about the story, makes them reflect on it, makes them really kind of ponder the context. I don't know the context. That's not the right answer. But just ponder kind of.
Making people think is a really good thing. Yes. I mean, if you can make somebody think outside of where their stance was,
right.
You're doing awfully well. Do you accept compliments well?
I don't know. Okay. Well, it's subjective, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
I take them. I'll say thank you. And I'll be like, wow. And then... I don't know. Okay. I love compliments when I think about them, but when I get them, it's like I'm thinking internally. Do I smile? Do I do I say thank you?
Why is it so hard humankind to accept a compliment? Yeah. Well, like I wish I could.
Maybe it's poor self image all the way.
Oh, 100%, 100%. We're awful to each other.
Oh yeah,
and all of that is just internal voice.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, because you're brilliant, and I love you to death. And so let's go to your compliment side of things. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
A lot of times it has to do with the music. People, if they saw that I was in charge of that, they say something. And a lot of times it's just if a kid has a difficult name that's never been pronounced right. There's been a couple cases there. I'll never forget it. One of my first years, his name was Chad Wadowick from Haver.
Okay.
No, he's from Lewistown.
I can see how you get those mixed up.
Well, they were in the same conference. So.
Okay, I'll give you that.
And then also a kid from over in Hamilton, their parents came up and said they appreciated hearing their name right. And that's just part of the job, but that means a lot to me. And And just, you know, if people comment that they, you know, enjoyed it after, you know, what I added to the game, if anything, if they mention that, it's always nice to hear.
It's interesting being, you know, in this building in the Hyper in a much different capacity than I was before, but to know for people to, the way they talk about if you're here or not, you know, if you are on PA or not, it means so much to so many people. I think you'd be surprised.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge deal. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Let's talk game days.
Because your brother's a celebrity.
Let's get back to Facebook comments.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into that. Let's talk game day. Like when let's say it is we brought up Carroll and Western. If it's either of those doubleheader in January, it'll be the second time they play. What are the things when it comes down to getting ready for game day that are important to you? What are the things that you like your pecking order of how you come in, get set up, and get ready to go?
The first thing is just to find out if any name's going to give you any trouble. Go through the roster and just get the pronunciations out of the way to begin with. And then, yeah, you know, a conference game, you know who the scorers are and who the players are, but make sure you're familiar with them. And what I like to do is also, you know, I mean, have a working knowledge to where if you can get the assist on the basket as well for teams you're familiar, especially in the conference. I think it's just I don't get it all the time, but I just think it adds a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just that and having the music lined out, and that's really it. There's not a lot of preparation.
Okay. What do you think, do you look forward to the idea of adding the new six schools? You know, because we're going to see so many different schools.
Well, it's going to be a challenge early, just becoming familiar with these schools. You know, in 2 years, it's going to be like anything else, but
Tom, what are the chances either of us are going to be here in 2 years?
That's a very good
And when
question.
I say here, I'm not talking the lounge. I'm talking above ground. No, you're a young pup.
One nuclear bomb changes everything. That's all I'm saying. One Yellowstone eruption.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean,
No more petting the buffaloes.
Yeah. Thank you for putting the spotlight on that, too. I appreciate that. I really enjoyed.
I'm going to go call my dad.
It's okay. I'm sure rational decisions will be made at the highest levels.
I assume.
I'm hoping.
Where are you? You're bringing this right down into the ground. Come on. We're going to keep this plane flying.
Preparation.
So talk about your preparation, please. Because from a TV perspective, you obviously are entering the game day with a little bit different perspective than Tommy and I are. I assume to a point.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what I do is just kind of reading your game what do you call it?
Game
your
notes?
Media notes. Yep. Game notes.
Okay.
And just digesting those, looking at past history of how teams have played and, you know, just having an idea of how much time I have in my broadcast, what the most important storyline is, whether I'll have time to get sound from players or coaches, and... I like to get there early, too, because I'm kind of insane and just kind of, like, sometimes I'll get to this gym, like, 2 hours early.
I'm not going to lie. I love when I walk in and you're here, because I get, we're going to put the E on it anyway. I get so much shit for how early I am for everything. Like, Ron Haskett and JT ride me, and the only one who's worse is Bill Foley. the amount of crap they give me for how early I am for everything. So when I walk in the gym and I'm setting up the stream stuff and you're sitting there, I'm just like, oh, thank you, Josh.
Well,
like,
I love you so much. There's something relaxing and calming about being in a gym before it gets busy the day of a big game.
Okay.
And I get a weird adrenaline rush out of it.
Okay. Well, even you have if it's a playlist just, when you sit down?
Even if it's just I'm going to – no, not all. Sometimes I just, like, listen to the natural sounds of people warming up and you putting your stream together.
Okay. And my 873 trips I have to make up and down the bleachers because I forget things.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right.
But, and, you know, that's – it's the whole game day that I mean, especially football season, I love to get there early because you can get free food at the tailgate.
Good call.
But also, you know, there is a lot you can just learn by being there early and figuring out kind of what the vibe is like.
I am 100% with you. I wish I could have the stream set up for basketball quicker than we do. Luckily we do for football, you know, like the crew is usually there. We're like 4 hours early, making sure everything's working. Because I'm that same way. And for some reason, especially for football, when I get up in the booth and I kind of get in my spot, it almost, to be completely honest, it almost turns into like a religious thing for me. Like I sit up there, I'd love it for it to be dead quiet. I'd love to look down on the field, whether the teams are warming up or kickers or whatever the case is, and just breathe. Like it is so calming and beautiful for me. I love that same thing.
Okay, but the people don't really realize what goes into. I mean, I want to know what goes into your preparation for a broadcast. Like, I mean, if for a football game, you got, you know,
look 11, at Tommy 11 on 11 the both here. Ways. I love it.
But no, he's got that. You've got the skill positions, but you're on top of the people making blocks. You've got the history of the schools. You've got so
I love
much
that stuff.
Right, just to add on to that, do you have like spotting boards? Do you have how many pages of notes? How do you organize them?
So I used to use spotting boards. I was a big fan of spotting boards, but I just use rosters right now, and I have for. I think Haskett and I have just gone straight rosters for probably about the last decade or so. I think we're in a situation where we have been around the conference, especially for so long, that, you know, we're lucky in the fact that not only do we know the kids, we know a whole lot of the kids' parents. And not only for us, but for Carroll and Western and everybody else, we know the coaches. We've always had such a good relationship with everyone. You know, before I took the job at Montana Tech, I really cherish my relationships I had with coaches. And I remember one of my best memories of an interaction with a coach is Haskett and I are in Helena, and we're walking on the side with the stands and Carroll, and we're up on the concrete area, and Mike Van Deest walks over and he's like, "Hey, gentlemen, how are you?" And we're like, "Good, coach, how you doing?" He's like, "Good." And at the time, this would have been, I think it was 2015. And we're walking up and he goes, we're honestly just shooting the shit. We're bullshitting and talking to coach. And he was always incredibly good to us. And we're talking back and forth, asking about injuries and asking about who's playing what and making comment about how well or somebody's playing, things like that. And he goes, "Oh, by the way, did number 33 happen to get on the bus?" And it was Nolan Saraceni. And I'm like, "Yeah, coach, I'm pretty sure Nolan got on the bus." And he goes, "Ah, shit." and it was the game that Nolan ran for like 279 on him. And that'll stay with me for the rest of my days. But I always loved that connection with the coaches. And, you know, they've always told us things. And obviously they hold back a whole lot. But that for me is kind of the beginning of preparation. You know, I think the coaches will always tell us, you know, who's playing well, who's not, who's, you know, kind of making rounds for them. And I think they're even more specifically will tell us about the other teams in the conference. And even our own about who's playing well, about who they're really kind of watching out for. I love those conversations. But then, you know, for me, yeah, it's rosters. I always, you've been in there enough where I have a whiteboard in our booth, that I put all my numbers on. And I've always gone, my notes have looked the same for 20 years. I always start with the quarterback. I put the quarterback at the top of my list. I do his attempts and completions. I do his completion percentage. I do his yards, his touchdowns and interceptions all in a line. And it's for both sides. I always have my whiteboard split. I have Tech on the left. I have whoever we're playing on the right. Running backs are next. I'll usually, if they do go three deep, I'll go three, but usually it's just two, as far as running backs and the same thing.
Not in the Simpson game, it wasn't.
No, it was not. That one, where you sit and you talk about feeling bad, I had to look at the roster going, "Who in the hell is that? Like, who is carrying the ball now for us?" I do my running backs next with the number of carries, number of yards, number of touchdowns. If they have catches, I put that there. Then my receivers. Then I'll do defensive stats for three or four guys that are important. That's kind of the way I always look at it is go, if we have somebody that's really dominating, you know, we've certainly had linebackers, two brothers, one of them probably had a hell of a career here. But he, you know, I'll put those numbers or, you know, with interceptions or whatever the case is, though, the things that will make a difference, or I know I'll certainly talk about during the game, I will put those on the board. I put third down percentage on the board. I put fourth down percentage on the board. And then anything else that kind of jumps out at me.
Well, just, it's amazing. I mean, that's, incredible. I mean, the amount of just the preparation, but I mean, to have that relationship that you have with other coaches and to get their insight, I mean, it makes the broadcast, you add so much. I mean, things that are people overlook, but little insights like what the coach had to say.
Yeah,
a lot of broadcasters won't develop that relationship.
Yeah, and I'm really lucky, and I appreciate that. But the person that is even more so in that respect, in my opinion, is Haskett. Haskett knows everybody. You know, he's like JT, and I could not be luckier with the guys that I work with. I mean, JT and I have done games for like 15 years now. This coming year will be Haskett and I's 20th. Haskett and I started in 2005. I asked Ron Haskett to be my color guy standing in line at Dairy Queen. This was still the old, this predates you, Josh, but the
Dairy, one that's the La Serena now.
Nope. Downtown DQ. Oh, La Serena. Should we talk about La Serena for a little while?
There's another Dairy Queen?
All right, so there's a Dairy Queen on Harrison.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the green chili chimichangas.
Oh, my goodness. So before that building was there, there was a walk-up Dairy Queen. Are you familiar with the Dairy Queen in Anaconda?
They have us one, too. Okay. You know, they close in the winter. They're not in the summer. It's one of the... No. I'm trying to think. They close in the winter. You don't want ice cream.
Yeah, you don't want ice cream in the dead of winter. I was like, they close in the summer? I'm like, it's, and then you wonder why Haver gets a bad rap?
Yeah,
their Dairy Queen closes
without
over the summer?
Indoor, you just go to the drive-in. Yeah, all right. I know what you're talking about.
So it's a walk-up DQ, two windows. I am in the left aisle. Ron Haskett has his daughter Delaney on his shoulders, and he and I were talking, and he brought up the broadcasts, and he's like, you know, if you ever need any help or something like that, just let me know. And it was like a year after he got done coaching, and I'm like, well, why don't you come do color with me? And that was all it came down to. And that was 2005, and he's the
What's
guy.
What's your order, though?
So my wife was pregnant. So Sully was my wife was about, what were we, about 6 months pregnant at that time. And she was on a very much of a great Mr. Misty kick in pregnancy at that time. Hmm. I probably was on a Blizzard kick. I mean, I'm fat. I love Blizzards.
Blizzards are awesome.
Blizzards.
I eat the banana split one because then I can say I have my fruits.
No,
I don't think they make the banana split ones.
They stopped it.
I couldn't find it on the menu.
Oh my gosh!
Do you remember peanut butter crunch Blizzards? That was the best thing known to mankind. I mean, that's all that mattered. As a fat man, I say that with that honest truth.
Oh, I'm not.
But anyway, but back to Haskett, sorry. He's just such a good dude, and he's a lot of my prep. And then, you know, I got a wild hair for me. When Kyle Sampson was hired, I don't know what, it bothered me so much that I had no idea what number coach he was. You know, we started football in 1902. You know, Tech football started in 1902. We don't know what number coach Kyle Sampson was. So over the course of about a year and a half, I went through and did like the whole history of Tech football to find out that Kyle Sampson is our 13th head coach. And
13 in 120 years.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. So, but I'll give you those numbers to you. But that taught me a lot. And I love the Frontier. You know, I just do. I love the Frontier Conference. And anyway, sorry.
No, that's what makes you a special broadcaster, and you're the best, not just in the conference, you're the best in the state.
Well, thank you, but that's bullshit. I think that's why I asked you two here, is you guys, it's that same level of care. There's a level there that you want to do right, you want to be right, and you know, do what's right by the kids, and you know, move on.
I'm going to polish your app a little more, just because, I mean,
we're
living in the age where we have, you know, XM radio. Right now we can, you know, I mean, I've last night listened to the Pacers in Oklahoma City.
And which stream did you listen to?
The Indiana one.
Mark Boyle's awesome. He's
phenomenal.
So good.
But he's not bringing anything more than what you're bringing to Ordinary Games. And it's just a bigger audience.
He got his, what is it, something, one of his bones broke in that Palace at the Palace. And it's in the... documentary,
really?
Yeah. He got like punched accidentally by Ron Artest or something.
Yeah, but that's a badge 20 years later.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's
wear with
so
honor.
Good. Yeah, I'm like, I got punched by Ron Artest.
I got a popcorn.
Meta World Peace hit me right square in the face.
I got popcorn thrown at me out of the stands, but that's not nearly as...
Really?
No, all right, Josh, I don't mean to put you on a spot, but it feels like... Well, I'm going to. I apologize, but... Butte in Montana in general, as far as TV goes, is always kind of a springboard. You know,
yeah.
People come, you know, to, you know, you sign a contract.
Right.
And it's so different than radio, because normally if you're in radio, you're there either until you go absolutely crazy or you die.
Welcome to the 25th year of the morning show on Car FM.
But
is that crazy or dead?
Yeah, that's
that you were playing there.
Yep.
Yeah.
But talk about that a little bit. I mean, yeah. are there? Do you have aspirations to be? You want to go back to Minnesota? Do you want to? What would you like to be next?
I'd love to be purely sports at some point.
Okay.
I love living in Butte. I envision being here probably another year.
Okay.
After that, you know, we'll kind of see what happens, but.
When you go somewhere near really popular, will you point them back to the podcast for me?
So I can do that.
That'd be great.
My dream job would be like covering like rugby in Fiji. I think that would be amazing. Nice.
They've got a great team this year.
Rugby sevens or full?
Both. Okay. I just do all Fiji rugby.
I've never called a rugby game. I'd like to
call a track meet.
That's what we should do. We should go through the list of all the things we have covered or PA'd or even, like you say, written a story about, or that could be a hell of a conversation.
But, yeah, in terms of kind of what I want to do next, either some sort of play-by-play following a team, like I was saying, somewhere in minor league baseball maybe next. I don't know. Sweet. It really kind of depends on the situation and the circumstances. And, you know, I have family in Arizona and Minnesota. I wouldn't mind, you know, moving to the Tucson area for some sort of job. But I'm, you know, I'm kind of open to anything. I moved to Haver, so that kind of, that should tell you something.
Yep.
I lived there for 3.5 years. Not a lot of people can say that.
No. No, I wonder what the arc of, how many people can say they have moved from Minnesota to Haver? I bet you that's a really thin list.
It's not zero, but it's definitely, it's not a 4-figure number, and it's probably not a 3-figure number.
I believe I have. I have
the trains. You know, people a long time ago probably did.
Well, and probably homesteading even. That probably happened a lot more than we want to. I don't know if admit is the right word, but I bet you it happened a heck of a lot more. But let's just say in the last 30 years, it probably hasn't happened much.
No, that's fair. That's completely valid.
What are you guys looking forward to this year, Frontier Conference wise?
Wow. I don't even know what to expect. I mean, we're with all the new teams coming in. I'm not familiar with their records, with their, with their caliber. I'd imagine they're all fairly similar to what we've seen in the Frontier before. But you know, we're so used to having us. We do well, mm-hmm. and it's going to be interesting to see how we play against new systems and against new teams. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, but those are some big rosters I'm going to have to get familiar with as well.
Very much so.
I think women's basketball is going to be super interesting. When you bring in Dakota State, who Tech had the opportunity to play in the tournament this year, and, you know, on the men's side, you're bringing in Dickinson State, a team that made the tournament last year and has a Selvig as one of their head coach.
Yep.
That kind of writes its own storylines there. With this 22-game conference schedules for basketball. So
yes.
I'm interested to see what that means for the non-conference, how many, I don't want to call them cupcakes, but, you know, games against either Canadian teams or teams, you know, that would be quad four or quad three in if we're talking D1. How many of those you're able to schedule now versus how many games you want to go to, you know, places like California this year where Tech played. Yep. And play the men and had a couple of really competitive games against top 10 programs. So I'm just interested in just seeing how it all plays out. And with football, how the committee, when we get to the end of the season, evaluates. Because I don't believe there's going to be many non-conference games at all. I know Tech is really not having any non-conference. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about some of the other teams. Maybe have a spot for one in there. But
yeah, and I think, and I almost feel like if we're going to see non-conference, for the most part, it almost is going to be inter-conference, non-conference games.
Which, like, mm-hmm. Tech Rock
with
plays
Rocky
twice.
Yep, exactly.
This year.
Yep.
But I'm interested to see how it all plays out and if, and truly how beneficial it will be. How many bids, I mean, the Frontier could get, because it's a 20-team playoff for football this year. They're guaranteed two.
Yep.
So will they get, you know, one, two, maybe even three at large spots, probably not three, but maybe two. It'll be interesting just to see how it all plays out in each different sport. And I think Tech is going to build a really healthy rivalry with Dickinson State.
Agreed. You know, the other fun thing I find is that we have had so many arguments, so many ways to whine about the Frontier Conference from our perspective, losing out on playoff bids and things like that. We've had so many things that we have hung on for years, and now those are going to go away. You know, we always whine about the fact that we have to play each other twice in football. So, you know, we always lose out on playoff spots. So, like I say, it'll be real interesting to see how that changes our dynamic and if it does at all. And the other one is, you know, it's always really hard to get Cascade Conference opponents because they're in the world that we are currently, where they have 22, you know, conference games, and trying to get non-conference with them at times is really difficult. So now that we're in that boat, we'll see how scheduling is going to be difficult. And you bring up a great point, and I would love, you know, Coach Adam Hyatt works so hard on a schedule, and not to say that Jeff doesn't by any stretch, but trying to make sure that you're getting enough very good opponents to, you know, to get your ranking up and make sure you stay there to try and get into the playoffs and then hopefully host. It's going to bring a whole lot of challenges.
I completely agree. It'll be fun to see how it plays out, though, like we said. I mean, you're building new rivalries, getting to know new cities, new schools. I mean, not that I'm going to travel much to North Dakota, but.
We made a great point with Derek Selvig coming back, who spent so many years here as an assistant and had such a part in the, I guess, the building the blocks that the team's currently, you know, sprung from. It's kind of a natural rivalry right there, and it's going to be a healthy one.
Yeah, very much so.
And I love Derek Selvig, and was a great. I remember him one of the games. I think I won one game. I got to do play-by-play when my short career was in 2005 when his Red Devils played Butte Central in the Civic Center. We somehow had to do play-by-play games, and I got to do one of that, and it was just awful. There's tape somewhere, but sorry, Derek.
Oh, we need to hear it. Come on. I've obviously monopolized a whole lot of your guys' morning, early afternoon. Did we miss anything?
We cover the Blizzards, right? DQ?
Yeah, we got there.
We're there. Yep. We're good.
And we hit Las Arenas. So I believe from there, I think we've covered everything important.
Yeah, well, I would just throw out a pitch where if anybody needs me to do play-by-play for, like, backyard wiffle ball or something, $20 and a few beers.
What would be?
And I'm in.
Let's do, what's the dream job? Like, we kind of talked about you moving forward. What's the dream job? What is the job that you would run through a wall for, you dream about daily? What's that job that's hanging out there for you?
It'd be play by play for a Big Four sports team.
No, come on, we're talking dream. Is it obviously the T-Wolves? Is that your job?
Yeah, but I mean, there's the people in those spots are so solidified. I mean, Alan Horton's been doing Timberwolves games for like over 20 years.
Okay,
so nothing. I absolutely would be my number one dream job, yes.
T-Wolves, okay.
Yeah, Boston Celtics. If I could get the PA job for the Boston Celtics, I would finally be happy. But I actually got a chance to meet the PA announcer down there. I told him, you know, that I'm an announcer as well, and he wasn't impressed. he would not show me his setup. He talked to me, and he told me how he got the job, and I took notes.
No. He wouldn't show you his gear?
He was kind of standoffish.
Really?
Yeah, he wouldn't really. I couldn't really go over and see his mic. I had a chance to be on the court there, and but good guy, but he's kind of protective. And
okay,
I would be too.
Wow. Okay. All right then. That's unfortunate. Okay. All right. Well, gentlemen.
One thing I do before we sign
up. Yes, where is this going?
Just how much fun it is to be a part of all the game day activities here at Montana Tech, and it's a good crew. It's a good group, and you know, we wouldn't be
it's
up
a
here.
Fun year.
It's had nothing but a good time.
I mean, you guys broadcast for the games. I know you self-deprecate yourself. I don't think that's a phrase. Self-deprecate is, but self-deprecate yourself, I think, is redundant. But
yeah, that sounds like something you do in prison when you're alone.
That sounds like something I'd do.
But regardless, the quality of your broadcasts are super high quality. I think the only complaint really I saw was like the font for your Simpson game, because that went viral. It was like some weird script. But it compares to, some D1 broadcasts, honestly. Some ESPN Plus broadcasts pale in comparison to what you guys put together.
And I appreciate that. And our crew Our crew this year was so good. I've got a young man by the name of Barrett. Barrett runs, when it comes to football, he does the jumbo and the stream. Jason is our replay guy for football, and our crew is so good. And it's funny because, you know, they're all working jobs over summer. They're all students. Mm-hmm. You know, they're guys that are on campus. And the amount of texts that we will send back and forth going, are you watching this? Did you see how they did that? That was bad. Just like we want to be better than this. Like our mm-hmm. the sights are set so high on where we want the stream to be, and it's fun working with people like that. I love that.
Okay, Barrett, a blast to work with, but he takes it seriously
very much,
and he wants to do a good job, and he likes what he's doing.
Yeah, yep.
He's the future, man.
Well, and it's that same thing where you get around people that have a real high give a shit. You know, and, oh, yeah. Well, there's nothing better than doing that.
But you get that in a good crew, and then you get someone like Barrett who lights a fire. It's contagious. People want to outdo Barrett, and it's a good crew. It's a good atmosphere, and
well, like the idea that we're all already so excited about the Frontier Conference basketball tournament being here.
Yes, that's gonna be amazing. Especially,
we are so jacked
with no state basketball to hear this year. Having the Frontier is going to be just huge for Butte in general.
Yeah, and it's—I'll tell you—the people of town have come together in a big way. Advantage Butte made it possible for us to put the bid out, and without that, we couldn't have done it. So
we need the town needs to get behind that as well.
It's going to be big
if we can get the community support, get people in the stands, and get messages up on reader boards and people talking about it in coffee shops. It's going to stay.
Do you guys know anybody in media that can help us out with that by chance? So once again, thank you, Josh. Thank you, Tom. As Roll Digs, the official podcast of Montana Tech Athletics, as always, thanks for joining us. I told you it was going to be all over the map, and I think we did hit about every corner of the map in that conversation in some form or fashion. So again, I'm Paul Panisco. Thanks for joining us for Roll Digs. We have a lot on the agenda coming up here in the next couple weeks. We'll be checking in with Sindhu Diallo. Of course, just a tremendous player here for Montana Tech in his years, playing for Coach Adam Hyatt, and more importantly, just a great guy. You know, just truly one of my favorites. He has been in Qatar playing basketball overseas. I'll be checking in with him here shortly. And also, like I say, this is kind of our Jimmy Fallon joke. Athletic Director Matt Stippen might join us. He might not now that he's won another Athletic Director of the Year award. But I certainly look forward to talking to him. Give him some kudos and moving forward as well. So, again, thanks for joining us. Make sure to spread the word. Like, share, comment, and get others with us as well. Again, this is Paul Panisco for Roll Digs. Until next time. Take care.